Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.
So, Patrick, I know you're super excited. Lanterns
has landed.
Yes.
Ooh, I like the alliteration there.
You know I'm the one that likes alliteration, mm-hmm. and you like to make fun of me liking alliteration.
It's a win-win.
Kara, what's your position on alliteration? Just no answer. So a different question then.
Yes.
Maybe more for you than for Kara. Do you have a favorite Green Lantern?
I do.
Okay.
I've always kind of liked the Green Lantern concept, but, you know, he was fairly long in the tooth by the time I started collecting comics. So
and kind of dull.
I only really got into him, or into Green Lantern, when they sort of rebooted the series and introduced Kyle Rayner as kind of a new, young Green Lantern. And so that was 94, and I think I basically read his title for about 5 years.
Okay. So you're a Rayner guy.
Yeah, I've always liked Kyle Rayner.
So I went through the list really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Guy Gardner.
That's your
one
favorite.
One of my least favorite characters in all of comics.
Yeah, it's the first one you mentioned.
Alan Scott. The original Green Lantern, who was, like, always too old for me to understand,
yeah, also,
I think.
His vulnerability is wood, which just seems problematic.
It's very weird. Hal Jordan was always kind of fine, but as a kid, he was, like, super boring. He's like, a test pilot who was now a traveling toy salesman. Like,
yeah,
it didn't really,
he fell in hard
like,
times
it,
there.
It didn't really sell a very interesting character.
Yeah.
So I think for me it's Jon Stewart for two reasons. Number one, I remember watching the Justice League cartoon with Harper when Harper was young. And going to Target and buying the little, like, 4 or 5 inch figures.
Yep.
Also, in Lanterns, he's vegan. And vegans
got
to support vegans. Think about this for the power of the Pop Shop.
Uh-huh.
A couple weeks ago, I wore a shirt. It said, stop vegan villainy.
Mm-hmm.
And already Hollywood has responded.
I'm pretty sure the show was in the can well before.
Let me pitch you two quick possibilities.
Okay.
They did some really quick reshoots.
Okay. Doubtful.
Two. They found an end of Oak Street wormhole, traveled back in time, and got the veganism in.
Yeah, but then we'd have a non-vegan and a vegan Jon Stewart running around, and that just seems problematic.
Oh, yeah, the baby Barry problem once again.
Yep.
So anyway, like you gotta go with the vegan, right?
I guess so.
That's right.
We'll
you know what else you have to go for?
Pop Shop.
100%. Next. Hi, I'm Alan Austin.
And I'm Patrick Hamilton.
Welcome to Pop Shop. Here, stories on the screen inspire conversations about the real world off of it.
Yes, and this week we're tackling the first couple of episodes of HBO's Lantern, the DC Universe's latest spin on the Green Lantern concept.
As always, if you're liking this show, we beseech you, like, follow, turn on the old notification machine.
Yes, and WVIA's Pop Shop is brought to you by the F.M. Kirby Center, and we will be talking with Gene in a bit about what's going on there.
But before Gene gets here, let's talk a little bit about Lanterns.
Okay.
Patrick, you want to set up the show?
I certainly can.
Excellent.
So Lanterns focuses on two main characters from the Green Lantern Corps, which is sort of a galaxy-wide, universe-wide group of space cops, for lack of a better phrase. We've got the veteran Hal Jordan, and then his rookie-slash-trainee-slash-potential replacement, Jon Stewart. And the first two episodes find them investigating a possible alien incursion and also dealing with their own, shall we say, tense relationship. As Hal is not particularly all that interested in actually training Jon, much to Jon's frustration.
I think, though, Patrick, you can only use incursion in the MCU. There might be a trademark issue at that point.
Yeah.
So Hal Jordan is played by Kyle Chandler. He plays Jordan as a sort of a grizzled superhero veteran, I think you might say. He's jaded. He's got a lot of hard edges. It seems like maybe he's been exhausted by the duties and responsibilities of being a Green Lantern. Aaron Pierre is Jon Stewart. He's sort of the opposite of Jordan in many ways. He's very gung-ho. He's the Green Lantern in training. He's been wanting to do this ever since he was a little kid, and his dad would, as a punishment, shoot apples off the top of his head. We can talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we have Kelly MacDonald here as Carrie Kane, the small-town sheriff, trying to kind of hold things together as Rushville, Nebraska, of all places, becomes the epicenter of a galactic crisis.
There we go. I think we've got viewers set up.
Yeah, we're ready to. So there's nothing you love more, and we've talked about this, I think, Yes. Already in this season.
I'm pretty sure every time we have this topic, that is your segue. So
you say like some people call you Pastiche Patrick.
Nobody calls me that.
No?
No.
Pastiche Pat?
Nope.
Patrick nobody. The Pastiche?
Let's let it go.
Yeah. Let's talk about the film as a pastiche. Do you want to remind me of what a pastiche is so that I can participate?
Yeah, so a pastiche is just a thing that's made up of a bunch of different other things.
Okay.
So in sort of a television show or movie,
yeah.
It would be a television show or movie that's sort of smushing together a bunch of different, say, genres.
So in this case, we have a film or a show that's definitely a superhero genre-based film.
Yes, and digging pretty deeply into Green Lantern lore to a certain extent.
Yes. So like the superhero part of this is obvious, mm-hmm. right? That you have Hal, you have John, you have yep. the ring, you have the lantern, you have the costumes, you yep. have all of the classic trappings of the superhero mm-hmm. genre. It's a little more complicated in that they set it in Rushville, which is a place where people yep. are uncertain about having a Green Lantern and mm-hmm. whether that's a good thing, and are super paranoid because mm-hmm. they now live in a universe that's full of aliens they didn't know about yep. 10 years before.
Yeah.
So in that way, it would be a perfectly fine show, mm-hmm. I think, but it would be very much confined to the superhero trope.
Yes, and also it would convention. Be treading a lot of familiar territory with the 2011 Green Lantern movie that DC and most people just want us yeah. to forget.
Nobody wants to tread that line,
yeah.
for sure. So I think the pastiche is what actually makes this show mm-hmm. way more interesting because yeah. they also roll in not only the superhero genre, mm-hmm. but the Western and the detective.
Yes.
So do you want to start with the Western?
Sure.
We can unpack that and we can move to the detective?
Well, I think there's a fair amount of overlap between okay. kind of the Western mm-hmm. and the detective, particularly within kind of the Green Lantern concept. Because, you know, you've got, as we mentioned, the Green Lantern Corps are basically space cops. And so you've right. got kind of Hal and John, as we mentioned, you've got the veteran and the rookie, which you've got kind of, you know, your veteran detective and your rookie police detective. Or in the Western, you've got sort of your veteran sheriff and the rookie deputy. And so I think there's a decent amount of overlap between the two.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think the Western in particular adds mm-hmm. is a real thematic depth mm-hmm. to this. Because once you bring the Western into the superhero genre, it raises issues of race mm-hmm. and violence mm-hmm. and privilege mm-hmm. and what I might think of is privatized law mm-hmm. or privatized justice. That yeah. justice isn't doled out by the state anymore, mm-hmm. but it's sort of in the hands of the most powerful cowboy mm-hmm. or sheriff or like whoever is in the locale.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing to think about in that, you know, the Green Lantern Corps was founded by the so-called Guardians of the Universe.
Right.
And it kind of raises the question of, you know, where does their authority to do that come from? And so are the Green Lantern Corps privatized sort of a privatized police force, or are they kind of that institutionalized police force gone galaxy-wide?
Right, and maybe there's problems with both
yeah.
kinds of law enforcement. Yeah. But here, the rancher who's raising a militia, his mm-hmm. name is Will, I think, Macon.
Yeah.
He is so reminiscent of other really powerful figures in recent mm-hmm. streaming series. Like, I thought mm-hmm. of Jon Hamm's character, Kara, in season what of Fargo?
I believe that was season four.
Four,
or
I think
five,
so.
Maybe?
Where he plays like a constitutional sheriff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So kind of a sheriff who takes the law into his own hands mm-hmm. because he knows better. It reminded me of HBO's Watchmen in some ways,
yeah.
too. Don Johnson's character
yeah.
is sort of this corrupt and racist police chief.
Yeah, not a surprise given that Damon Lindelof, who was the showrunner for HBO's Watchmen, is also one of the showrunner producers right. for this show. So,
but Will Macon could go to tea with those two guys.
Yeah.
It would be a very comfortable conversation. Mm-hmm. Like he is like that figure for whatever reason is one that we're wrestling with a lot in
yeah.
pop culture
mm-hmm.
right now.
Yeah.
And so he stands on issues that are issues that resonate in the world with us today.
Mm-hmm.
If we think about the aliens that he's so worried about
yeah.
here as immigrants,
yeah.
it becomes like the allegory here mm-hmm. is fairly clear. He says things like, I want to protect my planet for the people who were born here,
mm-hmm.
for instance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also in terms of, without getting too much into spoilers, you know,
right.
the alien presence is one that can very easily sort of appear as human. And so it's not that you know, that alien presence that he is so afraid of is one that blends in.
Right. And and that kind of blending makes it especially threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And becomes his justification for the sort of grotesque power grab that he's part of here
yeah.
to exert order mm-hmm. on his terms, or
yeah.
at least his mysterious benefactor's terms.
Yes.
In terms of like the local community of Rushville, but the, mm-hmm. the world more broadly. Yeah. I like that his wife, who's not white, mm-hmm. at one point is having the conversation with Jon Stewart and she says, white men can be as eccentric as they want to be.
Yes.
And rich white men have no constraints whatsoever. Yeah. On their behavior, mm-hmm. and it seems like a fair enough critique.
Yeah,
perhaps,
it's hard to argue with her.
Yeah, and so it becomes then. So Macon is obsessed with this idea of colonization. Mm-hmm. He says, "I've read a lot of history," and like yes. whenever somebody says, "I've read a lot of history," there's a chance there's going to be something missing yeah. in what they then say. He says, "I've read a lot of history, and I know that it's not good to be on the colonized end." Of colonization.
Well, actually, he says it's not good to be on either side of colonization.
But then he kind of says, especially, like, I don't yeah. want to get colonized.
Yeah, which and is so interesting when yeah. he prefaces that by talking about how the land he's on used to be Kiowa and used to be Sioux, and then the ships came over, and obviously him being a descendant right. of the people on those ships.
So pointing out what we all know, but he doesn't want to acknowledge,
yeah.
that his power and privilege in the world is predicated in a large part on mm-hmm. being on the winning side yeah. of colonization.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, in defending the character and how he's written, mm-hmm. it's how a lot of people think about the world. They yeah. spend little time thinking about how they got to their position mm-hmm. of power. They spend a lot of time thinking about threats to that
yeah.
position of power. And Macon is right there mm-hmm. in that. And yeah. The Western just sets that up so beautifully, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anything more about the detective that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it makes perfect sense. I think one of the other things, too, as I mentioned before, in kind of trying to do a heavy swerve from the 2011 movie, the way that the detective sort of grounds this in a kind of realism, yeah. as opposed to the film that just went completely cosmic and kind of brought in all right. of the Green Lantern lore that you could possibly bring in at one point. And so, yeah, kind of the detective, and again, the idea of particularly the kind of the classical detective as a figure kind of wanting to maintain or bring back the status quo or, again, to preserve order, that's kind right. of how the detective has always functioned, is to find, you know, the anomaly, the problem, and rectify it in some way.
Absolutely. And so it sets up so nicely in that way. It also mm-hmm. sets up, like, this great vibe between Carrie and Hal, I think,
yeah.
who are both really good detectives, except for when they're not, mm-hmm. I suppose. But they always know the question the other one's going to ask.
Yeah.
And it creates a really kind of interesting personal dynamic. Like a really well-written mm-hmm. detective movie
yeah.
has to have that kind of give and take mm-hmm. in the dialogue. And I think they've captured that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, it does kind of play on that idea of Hal potentially as a more rogue yeah. force, where she is kind of the institutionalized force, at least in... I forget the name of the town that they're in.
Rushville.
Rushville, thank you.
Right, but it gets really complicated, and we can talk about those complications probably better in the second half of the show.
Yes.
When we can actually talk about spoilers a little bit.
Yes.
So after Gene is here to talk to us a little bit about what's coming at the Kirby, we will be right back. And welcome, Gene.
Yes, here to tell us all about what's going on at the FM Kirby Center.
Hello, but gentlemen.
Before we do, real quickly, we were talking about lanterns.
Yes.
And you said that Green Lantern is one of your... favorites?
One of my favorites. Definitely okay. my favorite from the DC universe.
So do you okay. have a favorite Green Lantern?
Probably Hal Jordan.
Okay.
Just because all he's right. the one that I started with.
Going classic.
Okay. Yeah, nothing wrong with the classic Hal Jordan. Yeah, sorry to cut you off, though, because we should talk about the Kirby.
That's true. right. That's okay. Lanterns is also very good.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm happy yeah, to talk about
absolutely.
That also. But at the Kirby this weekend, we have the world's greatest tribute to the Traveling Wilburys. That's this Saturday at 7:30. They're going to play your favorite hits from the Traveling Wilburys, and then they'll also play songs from each artist's career.
Oh, very cool.
So they'll play Beatles songs for Harrison, Bob yeah. Dylan songs, et cetera, et cetera.
I assume you were a big Traveling Wilburys fan back in the day.
I do like the Traveling Wilburys, because Tom yeah. Petty was part of the Traveling Wilburys, wasn't he?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm a big Tom Petty fan.
Big Tom Petty fan.
Yeah, I saw okay. him and Jackson Browne live at Red Rocks back
That's
when I
right.
lived in Colorado. It was a great
like
concert.
Like one of your two concerts, right?
What's one of my five concerts? Thank you very much.
Got that a little
we'll have to bump that number up.
100%. Sounds like a great show.
Yep.
Anything
it's going
else
to, be a great show.
To talk about today? Or?
Just that this week. And then okay. we're working towards the Diamond of Downtown. It's
yes.
the documentary that's going to be about the FM Kirby Center and the community that helped bring it into existence and supports it to this day. That's on September 19th. And you can come for free. Just go to our website, kirbycenter.org. And then you can reserve your tickets on Ticketmaster.
Okay. Fantastic. Absolutely. Cannot wait to see that.
Yeah. So looking forward to that a lot.
Same.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for having us.
Yeah. Of thanks course. So much for dropping by. And welcome back to Pop Shop.
That's right. And thank you, Gene, for coming by and telling us all about what's going on at the Kirby Center.
Always a treat.
Mm-hmm.
So now, as we turn to the second half of the program, Patrick, we should warn viewers that spoilers may creep in at
almost
this point.
Guaranteed to.
I believe that is true. So as we move on, we thought maybe we would frame the second conversation around fan complaints.
Mm-hmm. Assuming there are any. Because, well, you know, fans of superhero media are generally very reasonable in their appraisals of things.
Known as very chill, willing to live with slight variations on the stories that they expected were the ones that had to be told.
Yes, it's just important to see a good story. It doesn't necessarily have to fit canon. Yeah.
You know, it's hard to get along sometimes with somebody that's so locked into that way of thinking about the world.
I don't know. I think they would be very easy to get along with.
I imagine you would imagine that to be the case. So one of the complaints.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe some of the complaints have some grounding to them, but, like, let's talk about them.
Yeah.
Is that the show is too grounded.
Mm-hmm.
That literally we've got the Green Lantern Corps that spans the entire universe. It's this galactic story.
Yeah.
And it's a story that's not only sort of earthbound, but it's Rushville, Nebraska.
Yes.
Bound. Like, it's very narrowly circumscribed.
Yeah, it is.
And I understand that to fans, fans of Green Lantern, like, the Green Lantern is really a precious thing, and they don't want to see it messed with too much. But I would remind those fans, too, that some of the most famous Green Lantern stories are actually very earthbound. Like, so the most famous would be Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams, and their run starting in 1970 that's often credited with social relevance, the idea that comics could address social issues in the world around us. And that starts in an inner city where they battle just an individual slumlord.
Yep.
And then they move to the frontier.
They go to Desolation. Yep.
And then they go to a Native American reservation. Yep. And so in many ways, you could argue that being so earthbound and circumscribed is actually canonical in its own way.
Yeah. Well,
does that help you?
Well, yeah.
Okay, good.
I think so. Yeah, in terms of... Because that was one of the points I was going to make, is that I think if you ask people today, comic fans today, like, what is the classic Green Lantern run, I'd be shocked if anything came up but the Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams run that you mentioned.
Has to be,
it's,
right?
It's the classic to this day Green Lantern run, and very much grounded in earthbound sort of issues.
Right.
And again, I would also argue that going that direction is not only steering into kind of the most acclaimed canonical story, but also is a very strong swerve away from the 2011 movie. And I do want to also give the show credit for doing something unexpected in that they could go the very cosmic route. They could give us very kind of traditional looking Green Lantern costumes and things like that.
Right.
But they are kind of veering in an unexpected direction, and I want to give them credit for that.
I want to give them extra credit for that, because not only is it unexpected, but I think it works in ways that elevate this beyond what it might have been otherwise. The way in which the show is so grounded and so local really makes it a story about human beings.
Yeah.
And I've watched enough superhero movies. I don't need huge fights. I don't need explosions. I don't need laser beams. Yeah. I want superhero pop culture that's speaking to me about the human condition, or speaking to me about the world in which we live. And because it's so circumscribed, and we don't have to worry about how cool the suits are or how cool the ring powers are, we get to know, I think, Hal and John in really personal ways, right? Yeah. And on the surface, Hal could be a pretty kind of static, standard character, but it's not. At one point, Carrie says, is he really fearless or is he just really lonely?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of opens the door for the viewer to start thinking about Hal as a human being, thinking about, like, what are the consequences or the costs to to an individual person of having the responsibility of being the Green Lantern.
Yeah, well,
for
I think
a decade.
I think that's one of the things, particularly that's important for Hal's character, is that the Hal that we have, particularly in the 2016 Hal, because it does jump between various eras, is someone who does seem kind of worn out and run down, and kind of tired of, in some ways, being the Green Lantern. Even as much as he also seems to chafe against the idea of John being his replacement at the same time.
But that's such a human reaction, right? The fact that he forgets to bring the lantern with him when he comes to Rushville, suspecting that there's a big alien incursion, suggests, to your point, that this is a guy that wants to be Green Lantern, but maybe doesn't so much want to be Green Lantern anymore. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's a really interesting take. He is not just this noble, pure, 100% courageous kind of character. When John goes to his home to get the lantern, he lives in a mansion, but he doesn't live in it at all.
Barely occupied at all.
It's just such a tragic portrait of a guy who was fearless and took on what he wanted to take on and just, it's taken its toll.
Yeah.
The same for John, I think. It's the first two episodes really have me, wondering what drives this man, you know? And I go back to that, to where it starts with him as a kid, which is a really weird scene that maybe you can help me unpack.
Well, see, here's the thing, because you mentioned him being punished by the dad shooting the apple off his head. I don't think he's being punished. I think, we may be finding this out in the third episode, because my understanding that's going to be a lot of flashback to John's past.
Okay.
I think the dad is training him to be a Green Lantern. Well, and that John was tapped as a child to be one. Because if you notice, there's the long trail of bullet holes behind him that they've been doing this for a long
time. They've been doing this for a long time.
But it's specifically making sure that John is not afraid.
Yes.
And then there's a later scene when it jumps ahead, and when John is having issues with Hal, the first person he calls is his dad to complain.
Right.
And his dad also has complaints about Hal. And I think there's a whole, John having been chosen for this role, that his dad, for some reason, is training John for, but also seems to have a resentment for Hal.
So why his dad is upset, though, that he's watching television, where Hal Jordan is giving the interview, where he sort of reveals who he is and how he came to be. It seemed like a punishment. His brothers are really upset. The dad's coming home. Obviously, they're not supposed to be on the television.
Yeah.
Maybe, the dad's discipline is also a further way of getting him ready to become a Green Lantern.
The other way, too, that occurred to me is that the dad might have originally wanted to be Hal's replacement.
Interesting.
And so he doesn't want to hear about Hal.
Mm.
Or he's so invested in John and John becoming the Green Lantern, he doesn't want to hear about Hal.
It's interesting, though. That opens up another way of thinking about John Stewart's character, which is when you're chosen as a six-year-old or whenever in your theory he was chosen to be a Green Lantern and you're told you're going to be the Green Lantern and your dad takes you out to the garage door every night and shoots an apple off your head. Do you really want to be the Green Lantern?
Yeah.
Or are you being kind of molded into becoming something you don't want to be?
Yeah.
I think that would, if you're right, is going to open up a really interesting avenue of storytelling.
Yeah, I think there's something in John's past that we have not found out yet that we're going to find out.
So how about another fan complaint?
Mm-hmm.
Not enough ring slinging, which is apparently what Green Lantern fans call using the ring.
Yes.
I guess it's like gunslinging.
Yeah.
Right?
It is,
but
with
the ring.
Yeah.
So for me, I can understand the disappointment. The ring is, when I was a kid, the only thing that appealed to me about Green Lantern.
Yeah,
he was such a
cool
boring
about
person.
The ring is the coolest thing
but
about
he could
Green
do
Lantern.
Whatever he wanted to with the ring. And with CGI, you think, you could have so much fun with it.
Yeah.
Maybe Ryan Reynolds taught us you can have too much fun with it in a way that the film then doesn't work. I think they made 100% the right choice to lean away from the ring. We wouldn't get the human stories. We wouldn't get Hal and John, like we've just talked about them, if it was all about the ring and what the ring can do.
Yeah, well, and also, if you go to the ring slinging early, there's nowhere else to go with that. And I think it also speaks to Hal's character. He's got this ring that he can create anything with. And in the first episode, he creates a bottle opener and money to run a jukebox machine.
Yeah.
And that's all he does. There's nothing terribly inspired in what he's doing. That his lack of ring slinging, the fact that his costume is kind of beat up and run down. You stayed after the second episode and watched the little talking about the episode, the costume designer talked about that the costume is meant to be run down in the same way that Hal is.
He clearly, as he says, doesn't want to wear the suit anymore. So finally, the complaint is they killed Hal Jordan.
Yes. Spoilers.
Well, we said that, right?
That's a big spoiler.
But K-Wash, we did say that, right, at the beginning?
We did. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, that was clear.
K-Wash is what we're going
Hope told me that Kara's nickname is K-Wash.
Okay.
Not really, but okay.
Okay. I think maybe it is now.
I'm pretty sure there's going to be more to that than we've seen.
Yeah. Although I'm okay with Hal Jordan being killed off.
I am too. I don't have a big problem with Jon Stewart. But
yeah.
I feel like there's going to be something more to it.
I just want to be really clear when I said that it sounded maybe really callous. I'm not really okay with it, but I think as a storytelling fictional device, it could work well.
Yes, you're against murder in general, but as a narrative device, you're totally fine with Hal being dead.
It's a very nuanced position
that I've taken.
But you know what we do on Pop Shop all the time?
Well, there's lots of things we do.
We take very nuanced positions, right? As we are about to do right now.
For most of the show, and then we boil it down to a very unnuanced pop or shop.
Right? Yes. Pop, everybody should subscribe to HBO and watch Lanterns. Shop, you should spend your money somewhere else.
Yes.
Yes.
Or subscribe your money somewhere else.
Yes. Yeah. Isn't that spending? So if you subscribe it, you're not spending
it? Well, I was just kind of trying to go for more of a streaming thing.
That would have huge implications on my budgeting at home. I can tell Vicky, I'm not spending money. Mm-hmm. I'm only subscribing it.
That's what I tell myself about many things with my budget.
You know, do you ever, like, you've been around a person a long time and they say something in that last jigsaw puzzle? You say to yourself, aha, understood.
Yes.
Understood. So I can't remember... Who's supposed to go first?
We should probably ask Kara.
Yeah, Kara.
What are your thoughts?
Also known as K-Wash.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to stick with Kara. You know, for right now.
Uh-oh.
What? I'm going to pop it.
Oh, okay.
That just went very kind of hesitant.
No, I like how you sold it.
Yeah, it's a suspense of it
all. Okay, yeah.
No, I mean, obviously, again, I want to make it very clear. I'm not up on the comic history and lore. but as a show, I mean, I'm enjoying the dark, mysterious, suspenseful vibe it's giving, you know. But what I really like about Lanterns, like you guys mentioned before, it just brings, like, some realism and grounding into the show, which I know a lot of superhero films and TV shows try to do. But this seems like, even with all the fantasy of it, it just feels real to me.
Excellent.
Did you have questions about the lore that you'd like answered? Because I feel we have lots of time for that.
No.
Definitely do not.
I do not.
Remember that.
Again, just want to watch the
show. So, Patrick, where are you?
Shocking everyone.
Yes. You're shopping?
Oh. I am a pop. No, I'm not shopping. Based on these first two, I've really enjoyed the first two episodes.
Yeah.
We sort of alluded to it. I think the dynamic between Chandler's Hal and Pierre's Stewart, which number one carries the show.
Yeah.
And it's another reason why the grounded storyline really works is that it allows them to carry the show. And their dynamic is fantastic.
Agreed.
And so, yeah, and I'm intrigued to see where this is going. I think they're doing a nice job of seeding, you know, storylines like Sinestro and the Manhunters and things like that that are kind of core elements of Green Lantern lore without it feeling overwhelming.
Okay.
That I like the way that they're kind of slow playing things and things are slowly developing. And because the first episode was a lot of setup. Second episode, we start to get some more payoff and whatnot. And so I'm hopeful that that's going to continue for the rest of the series. Okay. But yeah, based on these first two episodes, definitely a pop.
Can I see your sign again? When you draw the jagged, if you could show it to the... Is that like an emphatic pop or is it just your normal pop? I can't remember.
It's just my wanting to do like the comic book explosion.
Oh, like Batman 66?
Yeah, exactly. Like explosions always had like the jagged lines around it.
I bet Kara could very easily in post put a couple up that are like pow, kabam.
Yeah, it does not carry any meaning or significance.
Kara just glares. All right, so that leaves me. I have given it a pop light. Light? Because Green Lantern's light?
Yes, no, yeah. I do.
Pop light, and I drew... You're not appreciating the lantern that I drew?
I'm so mad because I was trying to figure out a way to do that, and I couldn't figure out how to do it.
And how simple it was.
I have never been angrier at myself.
So disappointed in
you. That is upsetting.
So for me, I mentioned Fargo and I mentioned HBO's Watchmen earlier. I don't think two episodes in, this has quite achieved that level.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, Fargo and HBO's Watchmen are two of the best streaming series I've ever watched.
Yeah, so it's definitely got HBO Watchmen vibes. Like it feels very much.
I'm not sure that it's.
We'll see if it pays off in the same way that it did. It definitely feels it's.
Yeah.
Again, the vibes are there.
Yeah. So it's not Fargo. It's not Watchmen, but Chandler, Pierre, McDonald, the acting that's going on here.
The cast is great.
They're taking some characters that could be very stock.
Mm-hmm.
Like the relationship, like the buddy relationship is not new,
yeah.
but what the characters are bringing and what mm-hmm. the writers are providing is really, yeah. I think, taking this to a different level. It's the pastiche-ness of this,
mm-hmm.
I think, that elevates it from a perfectly fine superhero watch mm-hmm. to something that is much more ambitious yeah. in its storytelling and in what it's trying to say about who we are
mm-hmm.
as a society.
Yes.
So I think as a group, we are all on the
yep,
same page.
We're all on board.
This is 100% a pop.
Yes.
Subscribe yourself some HBO
mm-hmm.
and rock and roll.
Yes. And thank you once again for watching WVIA's Pop Shop. And if you liked what you heard, not only subscribe to HBO, but you should subscribe to the podcast, like the episode, and turn on notifications so you never miss a thing.
Nailed it this week.
I know. I'm so well proud done. Of myself. Yeah.
Thanks, as always, to the FM Kirby Center for its continued support.
Yes, and next week we'll be talking about Coyote versus Acme, the live-action and animated film based on the Looney Tunes characters, in which the long-suffering Wile E. Coyote sues the Acme Corporation for their shoddy products.
It's about time.
Mm-hmm.
Come join the party.
You know me. We have a little surprise for the birthday boy.
Oh.
We have some...
Thank you all
delicious,
very much. Wow.
Gluten-free and vegan cupcakes for somebody's birthday.
Wow. Thank you all so much.
You are K-Wash, very welcome.
You're the best.
This was actually Patrick.
Patrick,
idea.
Thank yes, you so much.
Ron,
thank you so much.
All him. Yep. Let's just, give everybody credit.
Much.
But yeah, but happy birthday.
Well, thank
Alan.
You very much. I appreciate it. That's super thoughtful.
Yes.
Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the FM Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.